greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics and government went wrong and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight aimed at making us and government more responsible. If you have a question or insight, call us toll-free from any place on the face of the earth to 1-877-876-5227 or call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out if one of those old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries this show, contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for this show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as it is humanly possible on the station archives. And you can read my own blog at http://howtheneocons.blogspot.com. Now my blog, which you will also read on op-ed news and elsewhere, this week goes into our need to get off petroleum-based energy and take control of our own power needs. Just weeks ago, we got a tiny glimpse of what we're in for if we fail to do this for ourselves and for our communities. People died, especially the elderly. This winter, we could well see our most vulnerable friends, family, and neighbors dying of the cold. They say alternative fuel is a pipe dream, but there are people out there determined to make energy both affordable and environmentally friendly. Tonight, we'll be hearing from a man who spent a lifetime finding just the kind of solution we really need. Now, last week, we heard from Mark Davis in Georgia on his work as a political consultant and on campaigns in Georgia that have since that day erupted into even more national prominence. Cynthia McKinney went down to defeat. Those in her district say this happened because she's out of touch, unresponsive to her constituents, and actually has been a force of division between black and white voters. Those who support her say she is invaluable as a voice in Congress, standing up against the administration on such issues as the Patriot Act and the war in Iraq. Sadly, both sides may be right. There is no essential contradiction. The question we need to consider is this: how can we get people who disagree so passionately to find a common ground? How can we forge coalition? For one, I think it would be invaluable for the sides to sit down together and really listen to each other. Listening, understanding, and seeing the other side and walking a mile in the other guy's shoes can work wonders, because then we're following a lesson from Jesus that tells us we're all one in Him. Listening is the best cure for many of our problems. And now, our update from New York. For the second week in a row, there have been no updates in the Ada L. Smith case, but there have also been no further reports on battering or otherwise abusing any of her office workers. And so again, we urge you to call and congratulate Ada on her very much improved behavior. You can contact Ada at 517-455-3531 or email the senator at smith@senate.state.newyork.us. Let her know you appreciate that she's not throwing heavy objects or cursing. We always aim to be positive. And now our thought for the week ahead. This week on The Spiritual Politician, we're going to be hearing about alternative energy. Now, many may think that energy is not really an aspect of our spiritual natures, but it really is. Energy and how we handle it can actually be seen as an allegory for how we're supposed to relate to the sacred in our lives. Here's why. Each of us has a direct connection to the sacred. Christians see this as coming through Jesus, and Jesus told us this was the case. What Jesus said was that he died for us, and in so doing made us one in him. Therefore, we do not need a church or elders or anyone or anything to connect us to him. We're in his presence with every breath of our lives, even when we feel most alone. We can be part of a faith community with others, but when we allow others to think for us, to control us, we have less immediate connection with Jesus, and we lose that direct sense of connection to the sacred. Jesus was telling us that the power is in us. Each of us is at the same time one with everyone else through Christ and sovereign in our own spirits. It is by our own acts we create the record we take with us when we die. Your own power is important and includes the relationship you have with the world around you. When you do not have to look up for permission, but are confident and look within yourself for strength, then you're experiencing your own path to a relationship with God. When that truth is repeated in other parts of our lives, for instance, in how we power our homes, then we affirm the spiritual truth that connects us to God and to each other. The technology exists to make us safe and energy dependent today. Why are we clinging to a system that generates insecurity and fear? When we send so much of what we earn to the power company, we have less personal power to do good in our own communities. That is what happens when we're dependent. Our lack of energy to independence also makes us afraid. We look to others instead of finding our own strength internally. Nothing makes us more powerful than accepting the truth and taking action for ourselves. Today, America is in the grip of fear, and that fear is debilitating. We fear terrorism. We fear the future. We fear our own government. We've come a long way from the moment FDR said, "We have nothing to fear, the fear itself." Well, there's practically nothing else he ever said I agreed with. That's really very true. There are many reasons to become energy independent. There are no good reasons to keep the system we have today. Our guest tonight has been thinking about this issue for a long time. In fact, for his whole life. He first encountered the work of Tesla when he was still a small child and became fascinated with the history of how electric power was generated and used. As he drew to adulthood in New York, he realized how vulnerable all of us are when we depend on a system that controls us. That insight took him into his machine shop, into consideration of the economic system that allows that control to continue, and into the lab where he found answers. John Cadwalder is a political consultant, a businessman, an entrepreneur, a part-time theoretical physicist, and an inventor who looks beyond the boundaries of what the world is today to find better answers. Tonight, he's going to share that life journey with us. Please welcome John Cadwalder. John, are you there?
Hello, Melinda.
How are you doing this evening?
Very good, thank you.
I'm really glad to hear it, and I'm really delighted that you could be a guest on our show. I know that some of the things that you've been working on have been getting a lot of attention lately.
Yeah, I hear some of the things you're doing are, too.
And it's a good thing, right? We all will like attention.
Certainly.
Yes, and people are finally waking up to many of the issues that you and I have been pushing forward for many years now.
So how long have we known each other now, Melinda?
You know, I think we first met in the 1980s at a libertarian function in Los Angeles.
That's right.
Yeah, and you were working on the Reagan campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see you're still crossing those party lines.
I don't see lines.
Yes. And, yeah, you're still working on many of the things we talked about then, too. You know, you've always been one of the most inquisitive people I ever met. Would you still describe yourself as a general specialist the way you did that first night we met?
Well, I guess I'm a little unique in that sense. I'm just very inquisitive. I believe there's always an honorable way to enrich the world and with those that you encounter. in a sort of win-win scenario. I sort of see politics and political parties in much the same way that we're coming to understand the Constitution and what its original views were regarding age, race, and sex, that it's completely neutral. I've just never really thought about party politics as being a solution. I'm about truth, integrity, and ethics, and that's regardless of a party affiliation. I still find that there are a few characteristics alive that, fewer and farther between these days. I'm involved in physics. I love physics. It involves certain constants, things that are predictable. Constants are great markers because you can always rely on them to perform in much the same way every time you use them. If you recall Albert Einstein's analogy on insanity, I think he said that insanity, the definition of insanity was repeating the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If only we required our politicians to become physicists, we probably learn from our mistakes.
Well, if politicians had to be physicists, there'd certainly be fewer of them. That would be a good thing. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Well, politics today is nothing like it was in the 80s, that's certain. And certainly nothing like it was in the first part of the 1900s, and not even closely related to what the Constitution anticipated.
Yes. Well, could you explain to us in what ways it's different?
Well, I'll try. They're almost too numerous to mention in a radio show, but you know, here's a couple of examples. Consider the means by which the presidency is used as a forum for personal agendas, carrying out vendettas, self-enrichment, and personal aggrandizement. Senators and congresspersons routinely utilize their offices inappropriately. Albeit legal in many cases, they promote personal agendas and play the party politics game to try to sway voters in a certain direction or another, especially around election time. They do this with various issues that affect the public at large and at an individual level. This is not what these people are elected to do. They're elected and supposed to be a voice for the people that they're supposedly representing. I would wager that probably 99% of the issues on their agendas have nothing to do with what people actually want, the people that live in their actual jurisdictions or districts. They are either personal or party agendas that are carefully floated as sort of trial balloons test the waters of public opinion and sensitivity, and then they're promoted only after they've been tested to enrage the voters, not to enrage the voters.
Huh. Well, you know, politicians, they don't even necessarily know what they think. What they want is simply to poll and then tell us what they think we want to hear, and that's really horrifying.
Well, the office is being used by the politician today to disingenuously serve the best interests of the public. It chooses a position of power where cronyism and nepotism run rampant. And if you think I'm mistaken, look at the three most recent cases that we've seen in the public eye in the news. Karl Rove, Valerie Plame, you know, Jack Abramoff, and then there's Tom DeLay, you know, former Speaker of the House. And, you know, what about Randy Duke Cunningham, the Vietnam War hero, just to name a few.
Mm-hmm.
They consider that, you know, we're at war in Iraq primarily to carry out a personal vendetta of Chief George W. for his father. And we all know that he lied to the American people about weapons of mass destruction, and it was a calculated and deliberately false ruse to manipulate oil prices for personal enrichment.
Yeah, I thought that was really horrifying when he made a joke of it and looked under his desk.
Well,
it was disgusting.
Yeah, but see, these are the same people who are investing in blind pools and hedge funds where capitalists behind the veils of billion-dollar hedge funds that operate above the law, manipulating stock, futures, and commodities prices and markets. And essentially, they're just flat-out stealing from pensions and retirement plans through offshore short-selling of highly concealed stock manipulation schemes. And the SEC just sits back and does nothing about it.
So what you're saying is that they just... Oh, they put a line in our veins and just suck out the blood.
Well, the agencies that are charged with the responsibility of representing the public interest come under the purvey of whoever's in power at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So the SEC is going to carry out the president's agenda. The Federal Communications Commission is going to carry out the president's agenda. And, you know, all the other agencies are going to carry out the president's agenda.
Mm-hmm.
If you raise up and take, you know, stand up and protest, you're going to be made a spectacle.
Mm-hmm. So it's all part of their grid system is what you're really saying. And they really go after people who try to break the back of the grid system. Isn't that true?
Well, you know, there are several examples of that in the not too recent past. You know, something that was all over the mainstream news was the Richard Scrushy case in Birmingham, Alabama, for example, the former healthcare executive from HealthSouth.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you recall that scenario or not.
I do. I actually remember that.
Well, he appeared on CNBC and basically, you know, scorned the Bush administration for their policy on Medicare and Medicaid cutbacks, and it was done on CNBC, you know, MSNBC, in prime time, like around lunchtime one day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now when I saw it, I knew exactly what was getting ready to happen to him. Within 3 months of that broadcast, he was on trial by the SEC. The IRS and the Justice Department were charging him with securities fraud. He'd been, you know, shown out of his office, was prevented from going back into it, charged with tax evasion, mail, and wire fraud. And I should point out that he was later found to be innocent. But in the process, he lost everything, as if it wasn't enough that, you know, they used some stupid bribery charge later to come back after him, where he, you know, allegedly conspired with the governor of Alabama at the time, Don Siegelman, you know, to have committed some type of political bribery scheme. So, you know, when you it's like stirring a hornet's nest, Melinda.
Mm-hmm.
When you anger these people and they're in power, they use that power contrary to what the Constitution authorizes them to do, to carry out their personal vendettas.
Mm-hmm. So they take the rules that are supposed to protect it and they pervert them.
Yeah.
For their own benefit.
They sort of adopt this smear campaign, scorched earth policy for would-be detractors who oppose their agendas. And, you know, I ask you, do you think that it's the best kind of government the Constitution intended that we be ruled by?
Certainly not. That's not what it was intended at all. I mean, what it really meant was that we were supposed to rule ourselves as individuals and within our own communities. So it could be very much under our eye and we could keep it under control.
Well, these are high crimes. These acts are high crimes and misdemeanors, which the Constitution deals with, for which we should be revolting, quite frankly, and taking back our government and sending these bastards home. I don't know if you can say that on the radio, but, you know, it's not one party or the other. You know, if it's the Democrats that are in power, they're taking out and carrying out their agenda, and if it's the Republicans in power, they're carrying out their agenda. And when the Democrats were there, you know, you have Hillary, you know, who practically single-handedly destroyed the American family with her It Takes a Village freak show. If you really look back at history on that, you'd see that as a result, we're now plagued by DSS and social services problems, by them sticking their heads in everybody's business and using the public schools as a mechanism to teach our kids how to, you know, rat out their parents when there's a confrontation at home between mother and father, for example, using child abuse as a means to extort and coerce their parents. You know, it's just resulting in almost incomprehensible crime rates, unprecedented single-parent homes, teenage crimes and teenage pregnancies and abortions.
Yeah, and one of the things, of course, that most people aren't aware of, because they haven't been touched by that yet, is that all of these things actually create an income stream for the government.
They're all grit.
Absolutely, they're all grit.
They're architected as schemes to defraud the American people is what
mm-hmm.
they are. And if you look at them, you know, they're essentially all the same. They just have, you know, they put a different face on it and call it a different name, or it's dealing with a different topic, you know.
Yeah.
The world is just essentially crumbling around us while these freaks in Washington are scheming into how they can capitalize on the fall of Western civilization through their, you know, covert stock manipulation schemes and in their elitist secret hedge funds.
And it makes you wonder what they think they're going to do when they finish.
Well, I believe, you know, government's become too big. It's too corrupt. We tolerate way too much abuse of power, and there's no means or method by which the public can now gain control, regain control of government outside another revolution. But, you know, that won't and can't happen because none of the honest, law-abiding people have guns anymore. Just the criminals and the corrupt politicians have the guns.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that was what the intention of the Second Amendment was. It was to handle what would become necessary when we could no longer have the First Amendment.
Well, I think the change is going to have to come from the inside out. You know, people are going to have to start working together and let these criminals know that we're wise to their games and that we're not going to play them anymore with them. You know, one thing is certain. If we take the money away from them, they'll all stand up and take notice and probably take their bags and go home.
You think they'll just go home?
Well, if you take the money away, it certainly takes their incentive away, I promise you.
Well, it seems like they might actually try to come after us and figure out a way they could get our money even if we don't want to give it up. That could happen.
It could.
That's something we're going to have to think about.
Well, you know, there are solutions out there. The problem with it is that if you think about it and you really analyze this and you know, get a firm handle on the various infrastructures that are in place, if you've got a really good idea and you want to go to the bank and get funding, who has control over whether they loan you money or not?
It's another grid.
It's another government grid. If you decide you can't raise money from a bank because you're trying to put the deal together and you need, you know, ordinary investors to come into your deal to support you, to help you go public, who's going to be supervising you?
Mm-hmm. It's the same people over and over and over again.
It's another grid.
Yeah.
Exactly. So business can't flourish. You know, people can't negotiate contracts on their own with other people because there's this fear of the government grid laying over you that's ready to step on you.
Mm-hmm. It's every place you look. There's no place you can look and actually find what the original intention was, which was freedom, and the people doing it themselves.
Well, you know, I'm often asked the question, you know, how do you deal with this problem? How do you take the money away from them? Should we stop paying taxes? What do we do? Well, not paying taxes doesn't work because you couldn't get everyone to unite and steadfast on the issue. You could use boycotting, but, you know, there's just the issue then of getting everyone to play their part and holding to their guns, literally and figuratively speaking.
Yes.
Unfortunately, there are just, you know, too many brainless neophyte pacifists out there running around that support the system despite the injustices they see, you know, or what they hear about, or, you know, may even encounter because the issue does not affect them directly, at
mm-hmm.
least for the moment. And, you know, they use these lame excuses about that we do live in the greatest nation of all time, but, you know, until it hiccups and spews acrid vomit all over them, they think they're unique at that point, and then they want to take, you know, the task to hand. This is not a question of whether it's going to happen to you. If you're married, it's not a question of whether you're going to get a divorce. If you're, you know, living, it's not a question of whether you're going to die and your estate's going to get tied up in probate. You know, if you're borrowing money, it's not a question of whether you're going to have to go to the bank or not. It's a question of when.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, it becomes a question of how that grid is going to affect you.
And what you're saying is that there's so many different kinds of grids, it's even hard to count them all up.
Well, let me put it to you this way. The way to pretty much analyze how many grids there are out there is to analyze the various specialties that lawyers have.
Uh-huh.
The only people who win are the lawyers, the courts and the municipalities who are trying to find ways to issue tickets and fines using cameras and roadside speed detectors, taking photos of your license plates, you know, divorce, child custody, you know, spousal abuse, child abuse. You know, there's all kinds of different things out there. Just take the cameras that we've seen on the road. There's all kinds of cases going on about that right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, essentially, this is how ridiculous government has become. You know, they're basically assigning a ticket based on a photograph of your vehicle and your license plate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when did it become legal for a car to commit a crime?
I didn't know they had actually could do anything on their own.
Well, that's pretty much true. But you see what I'm saying? When you get the ticket in the mail, it's the presumption of guilt before you're actually charged, after you're already charged with the offense.
Yes.
So, you know, would you have me believe that a car could commit a crime? Do you see what's going on with this sort of new order style of politics?
What they're doing is they're streamlining their grid system.
They're lazy asses. These people are mad. You know, they're insane. Most importantly, they're not Americans. They're this sort of new age, new order, fascist, guilty of tyranny and seeking to overthrow our constitutional form of government as it was intended originally by our forefathers. So, you know, going back to the question of how do we hit them in the wallet, you know, I guess you're aware that there's a new movement that's afoot, and, you know, as one could probably expect, there's people on the extreme left and there's people on the extreme right, and all of them are trying to steal this agenda. But it's basically the agenda talking about a new wave of politics, one that doesn't have anything to do with party lines and those types of different things. It's about holding people to their word when they say that they're going to stand on an issue when they're elected.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something that really needs to happen. One of the things that our political system needs is it needs accountability, it needs honesty, it needs integrity. And the accountability, of course, is the way that you enforce that.
Well, you know, we're talking about alternative energy here, okay? If you stop and think about what is really happening in the world, and you just take power as a primary issue, electrical power. Analyzing electrical power can give you a lot of insights into how, you know, people look the other way and how issues are not being dealt with when there's significant economic benefit associated with it.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
Government derives an enormous amount of tax revenue from energy production.
Oh, I know. It's incredible. Take a look at how much they get out of it on all the different ways that they take it. It's more than 50%, isn't it?
It is. At the end of the day, it's probably more than 50%. Now, what if there were a way, let me give you an example here. What if there were a way to power your home or your automobile that didn't require fuel and that didn't require an electrical connection made to your house from the power grid?
That would be so amazing. That's what I was talking about earlier, too. We need to get off the grid. We need to be freestanding and independent.
Well, think about all the ways that the grid, just the electrical grid now, think about all the ways that our lives have been affected by the electrical grid.
Mm-hmm.
You've had dams blocking our streams that provide irrigation for crops. We've had, you know, high-power transit wires stretching hundreds and thousands of miles across the country, ruining the landscape. We've had our property seized and taken away from us through what's called rights of way, that allow people to have easements across our property when it's private property.
Yes.
But because they have an easement, we can't keep them off of our property. It's actually affected our individual property rights as originally intended by the Constitution because it's been so overwhelmingly adopted.
And this is really very recent in our history, too. It just goes back to the beginning of the 20th century.
Well, let's look at the negative side of it, for example, okay? What if you take into consideration the negative side of electricity? One, price fixing. Two, the fact that it consumes energy that we could be using in other ways much more beneficially and efficiently, okay? Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Just think about this. Where does a power line actually end?
Now, that's an interesting question. Where does it end? It ends where they generate it, or it ends at your house?
Well, it ends in your wallet is where it ends.
Well, that's certainly true.
Okay.
That's what it feels like.
When a bolt of lightning strikes the electrical grid, where is it going to terminate?
In my wallet.
In your wallet. But really, if you stop and think about it, your house is a fuse.
Yes.
The electrical company uses our houses as fuse boxes. And if you don't believe me, think about how many house fires have been started by lightning strikes to the electrical grid that go in through the wiring, short out the motors, ground to the ground wire, splinter and blow off pieces of wood and start fires, and the house is all of a sudden burned.
Yes, and of course they don't even want to be accountable for that. They don't want any of the liability whatsoever.
And the insurance companies, are they going to go after the power company?
I don't think so.
No. They'll pay the claim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is government turning its head on things that are costing American consumers billions, if not trillions, of dollars every year. Think about the amount of money that's paid every year just in insurance claims through lightning strikes to the electrical
grid. How much? Do you know how much that is?
I have no idea.
But I know it's probably a lot.
You know, there's one thing for sure. Government's probably not doing a research study about it because they don't want to know.
Well, they don't care.
Well, you know, there's a lot of issues. If you just take the surface area of a roof of a house, for example, and you were to use solar panels to generate electricity, there's more than enough roof area on the average home to produce enough electricity that you could be selling power back to the power grid if you wanted.
Well, they wouldn't want us to do that. If everybody did that, they'd be bankrupt.
Well, that's part of the problem. That's another one of the negatives. See, now you're sort of getting it, Melinda. Okay. See, what we're doing is we're subsidizing government projects to manipulate us down the road.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best scam that you can possibly ever come up with? One where you are the victim. You fund the scam. The scam is being used to regulate the victim, and then the scam is then used and converted back to where the victims have to pay for the rest of their life to benefit from the scam.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well, so that you're paying coming and going and being there.
This goes back to the original debate that went on between AC and DC current, which one was best, okay? And the government policy of the day at the time chose AC current because AC current could be used as a long-distance-type distribution mechanism more efficiently than DC current. And as a result, it provided a better infrastructure for generating recurring income streams.
Mm-hmm. So they were very conscious of what they were doing.
Very conscious. These things, before they're implemented, are very well thought out. But you see, what we don't hear are the facts. We don't hear the truth. This stuff doesn't come to us in the way that we tend to think of the way, you know, truth really is, that our government should really be telling us. It's told to us in these sort of sound bites of grandiose ideas and how we're going to benefit from it, and it's twisted and manipulated in a way so that we can swallow it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If they showed us the whole elephant, we'd be sitting there looking at it thinking, how are we ever going to eat this thing?
Yes. But the point you made is so true. If all of us had the solar units on our houses, photovoltaic, and then we're generating electricity and feeding it back into the system, there wouldn't even be a need for any of the things that they have all this capital invested in. But it isn't even their capital, it's ours.
Well,
so we've actually paid for it several times.
Sure, but if you amortize it over the cost of the life expectancy of the house and you build it into that model, you don't even need the electrical grid at that point. The money that's being spent, you know, to power the electrical grid would easily put this in place on everybody's home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Especially if you take the money that's going in income streams that's subsidizing
the
electrical grid on a continual basis. And what have we seen? I mean, if you just go back to the 70s and 80s and look at an old power bill and then come back and look at a power bill now, I mean, you're talking about a 700 to a 1,500% increase in utility costs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, those are significant increases. And if your money were invested in something that were legitimate at the time, but see, you know, let's go back to some of our old discussions about, you know, during the Reagan days about, you know, what was happening and, you know, all those kind of things with alternative energy. Who brought up all the photovoltaic companies?
Well, it was, of course, the core constituents. It was the power companies.
Well, no, it's not the power companies. It's the oil companies.
Oh, that's right.
So you got the fox looking after the chicken nest.
Well, that's not very good for the chicken.
No. So who actually provides fuel to the power company?
Well, it's sounds like it's us.
No, it's us that's providing funding for the power company.
Well, money is the, you know, the money's the whole thing there.
But if you stop and think about the fact that the oil companies own the photovoltaic companies, they control both means or the patents to the photovoltaic technology for the most part.
But now, of course, a lot of those patents have run out, and they can't continue to do that.
That's true. And if you'll stop and listen, just stop and listen. Just think about what's happening. When Bush started talking about his new energy tax credit incentives recently,
okay,
people thought if they went out and bought a hybrid vehicle, they could, you know, get all these tremendous tax benefits from it and so forth and so on. Well, after looking at it for a short while, there have been several news programs who've analyzed it. Actually, the cost of owning, you know, a new hybrid vehicle really is more over the life of a vehicle than it's saving.
Well, you have to take a look at who designed it, right?
Well, because they increase the prices because you get the tax credit. So they're upselling you on the tax credits is what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. So it's just another way to put money in their pockets.
It's another way to put money in their pocket. And, you know, there are even states now that are starting to tax hybrid vehicles because they don't use petroleum. So
mm-hmm.
they're using the highway.
Yeah.
How are we ever going to not be an oil-dependent nation if we don't get everybody working together?
Well, John, isn't there something... What's it called? It's something about energy, and there are people actually getting together to do something about that, and I know you're one of them.
Well, you know, I've got several things, Melinda, that I'm involved in. You know, there's all types of technology out there. There's new photovoltaic using carbon nanotechnology. There's hydrogen fuel cells. There's new battery technology. You know, there's people talking about chemical thermal transfer technology, you know, I've got several technologies that I've been working on for the last 30 years. Physics is an amazing thing. If you stop and think about it, there's certain principles that you could benefit from that, you know, just are everyday type instances that are all around us, but we don't think about it. Think about the breeze that blows, you know, in most of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, the wall of your home is essentially a sail if used properly.
Hmm.
Okay? If you had an intelligent, you know, sensor on your home that could sense which direction the wind was blowing, you could actually capture all of that energy that's loading up, that's pressurizing itself on that wall as the wind blows. Direct it into a generator in the attic somewhere, and you've got electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even have to be, you know, a wind turbine running out in the yard. Doesn't have to be, you know, photovoltaic cells. There are simpler ways of doing this than we're actually exploring.
And that's one of the things you've been working on, right? You've been working on coming up with integrated systems that optimize the use of all of the different techniques and technologies.
Myself as well as several hundred other people. But
mm-hmm.
the problem is nobody's got funding.
Mm-hmm.
Because the government controls the grid. There's no access to being able to get the technology done. I mean, if you want to file a patent application, who grants you the patent?
That's true. It's the government.
There you go.
Which makes you vulnerable, of course, because we've all heard about the irregularities going on there.
Well, you know, I recently visited the patent office in Washington, D.C., okay? And I'm going to be truthful with you. I probably saw 1,000, maybe 1,500 people in the 3 hours that I was there in the afternoon.
Hmm.
You know that probably 95% of those people were of Asian or Indian descent.
Really?
Yeah.
That's sort of amazing.
And our patent library is open for the world to see.
So people are simply coming in and copying them?
Taking them back to China or Taiwan or, you know, wherever, and they're copying our patents, stealing our intellectual property, manufacturing it, selling it, and distributing it, benefiting from it in their territories, and then turning around and pirating it and shipping it back to us.
Mm-hmm.
What incentive is there for an inventor?
Well, I know that it's really difficult, but I know you have some ways that you've been talking about actually making this work, too.
Well, I think in order for it to work, it's going to have to be done in a completely novel approach.
Uh-huh. And if there's anybody that can do that, I know it's you, John.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, Melinda, but, you know, one person, you know, can't do it by himself.
Well, yes, but I know that you're not really one person. I know that you have a lot of people you're cooperating with.
Well, you know, there's one thing about me, and for those who know me, you know, I've been an environmentalist my whole life. I'm certainly not going to sell out to the big oil companies. It's one of those things where, you know, I'm still that 17-year-old radical political activist and environmental devotee.
Yes, I know.
I have some unconventional views about the world, some positive answers to some conventional issues, and some gripes and opinions that rub the monopolies and, you know, the grid, the power grids the wrong way. But, you know, nothing would make me happier than to spoil the pudding for these guys.
Oh, I know that.
They sit in their ivory towers and think they're immune from public, you know, scrutiny. And I think that it's about time that the public woke up and started showing them where we stand on these issues.
And that's really all it's going to take, isn't it? People are simply going to have to understand that they can do it themselves, that it's simply a matter of coming together and making it happen.
Well, let me give you a couple of examples, okay? Let's think about the oil monopoly here for a minute. Melinda, we could talk for days about this, okay? But, you know, there's going to have to be some centrifuge of information, of knowledge, that enlightens people so that the general public can get this information without the, you know, political disinformation or misinformation campaigns that are running contrary to what the truth actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You know, these politicians, they're immune from $100 a barrel oil prices for the most part.
Oh, they don't have to worry about a thing.
They're not paying for it. Their salaries are, you know, 10 times the normal salary of the average American worker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, you've got elderly mothers and grandmothers dying from heat waves, no air conditioning or the ability to care for themselves. You know, power bills run $300 a month to run air conditioners. There are poor families in this country that don't have central air conditioning, but a room air conditioner uses as much electricity as a whole central air conditioning system does because of its poor design.
That's right.
What are they doing about this?
Well, they don't care because they get the money from the electricity, so they don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about grids here for a minute, because I can take you down a different track regarding grids. Grids come in a variety of colors. They come in a variety of flavors. They come in a variety of, you know, different informational campaigns and public promotion campaigns and so forth and so on, but
mm-hmm.
they're all around us.
Absolutely.
You recall the issue surrounding the Freon changeover in the 1990s when they outlawed refrigerant 12 that came in the little one-pound cans that you could buy in the drugstore and recharge your air conditioner in your car?
Mm-hmm.
It was sold to us on the premise that it, you know, accelerated global warming because it had hydrofluorocarbons in it, you know, monochlorodifluoromethane and, you know, dichlorodifluoromethane, R12 and R22.
Mm-hmm.
These are refrigerant gases that are used in appliances because when they convert from a liquid to a gas, they cool.
Yes.
Okay? When they're pumped, they expel heat. You know, a lot of technology improvements have been made. We have heat pumps now that utilize both sides of that cycle, and they really work well, but they're not an end-all to the problem. Okay?
No,
but
I know.
Let's go with the larger issue here. R12 was outlawed simply because we were building up, you know, these gases in the upper atmosphere, and it was supposedly warming the Earth's atmosphere, contributing to global warming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Admittedly, that's true. It does contribute to global warming. Okay? They took
mm-hmm.
it out of hairsprays. They took it out of a lot of different things. Okay? But if they knew that R12 contributed to global warming, why didn't they take it out of the... Why didn't they move the evaporator coil that sits right in front of the radiator on the front end of an automobile to some other place in the car so that if you have a 2-mile-an-hour fender bender, you don't have to replace or repair a $3,000 air conditioning system.
Well, I think they'd prefer to have us have to replace it because they make more money that way.
That's a grid.
Yes, it's a grid, definitely.
It's a grid, okay? So a little engineering by relocating the heat exchanger that evaporates the heat where the cool is being, you know, distributed inside the vehicle could have eliminated millions, hundreds of millions of pounds of R12 into the Earth's atmosphere. We would have never had to go through this situation. I mean, do you know how many people have had problems with their air conditioning system in their vehicle and they've gone back and repaired the vehicle and, you know...
Oh, it's hideously expensive.
They can't repair the R12 systems anymore. They have to be replaced.
Yeah.
R232.
Well, and they prefer that.
It's a new grid.
Yes.
It's a new way. It's, you know, I have an expression, if it sneaks around like a rat, steals your food, then craps in what's left behind and, you know, while you're not looking, and then leaves you with that sort of feeling like you've been violated, like you've been to the gynecologist or something, it's probably a politician.
Well, I could certainly understand that.
Well, you know, again, we continue to have these sort of recurring themes, these same sorts of recurring themes. You know, this is a highly sophisticated government. They're using research scientists and physicists and engineers and all these people, economists, to master all of these various market manipulation tactics that surface every year or two. You know,
mm-hmm.
Back in the 90s, it was gypsum board. Then it was Douglas fir because all the trees were dying in the forest out in the Rockies and in the Sierra Nevadas. You know, then it was roofing shingles because of fiberglass or something along those lines. Then it was Freon, R12, R22.
Well, it's been this in litany over and over and over again, but at the end of every one, what we find is more grid.
Well, that's what I'm trying to point out to you. Freon, for example, was 20 cents a pound wholesale back in the, you know, early 80s. It was that price forever before that. It was 20 cents a pound back in the 50s. Well, during the Freon embargo of the 90s, when government single-handedly caused one-pound cans of Freon to be removed from your local drugstore or the Walmart or the Kmart on the premise of global warming and greenhouse gas emissions, you realize that the cost of a pound of Freon ran up as high as $18 to $20 a pound.
That's incredible.
There was a panic. There were literally people lined up the day that these things were being taken off the shelf, lined up for, you know, 200 and 300 people standing in line at these big, you know, automotive parts stores and Kmart and Walmart. You know, that's a 9,000% increase in price.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think got rich off of that?
Well, of course, it was the people of the grid.
There you go.
And I think I'm going to call them that for now on. Call them the people of the grid. But, Van, you know, we've talked a lot about the stuff that's really going badly, but let's go and talk about some of the things that are really going right, because there are a lot of changes taking place now, and people are becoming aware at more and more every day. So what can people do to change the future that we're looking at for our children and our grandchildren?
Well, the first thing to do is to start asking questions and realize that government officials are using these schemes as devices, as, you know, manipulation tactics to create these new economies. It's the same lie over and over and over again. In other words, you know, what they're trying to do is to create a new base for taxation, you know, a new previously non-existent windfall profit opportunity for government insiders, you know, a new way to drive gross domestic product and to keep tax revenues flowing so that they can sit in their ivory offices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what many people don't realize is that, or aware of, is that many of our elected officials in Washington are routinely provided highly confidential insider information on many new technologies and products and companies, new legislation that's coming about and the companies that are going to be affected about it positively or negatively, you know, emerging technologies. These elected officials are offered the opportunity routinely, and many of them participate. In fact, I would wager that most of them participate.
Mm-hmm.
They're offered the opportunity to invest in these new technologies, these new projects, these new companies with certain, you know, private anonymity.
Yeah. But, John, what's it going to be like for our grandkids? Because, you know, you and I both know that the changes that are coming are going to happen and that people are going to have alternatives out there because we're going to make sure that those alternatives exist. When your kids are older, what sort of things do you think they're going to have? Let's go to that for a moment. What's it going to be like? They're going to have a house, right, that's completely solar, that's off the grid.
Not unless someone stands up and does something about it now.
Yes, but definitely that has to happen. Now, how are we going to do that?
Well, I think that the first thing is to wake up and to a new consciousness that, you know, enlightens you as to what the grids actually are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Grids are everywhere. You know, marriage is a grid. Marriage is a grid that once they know that you've gotten into that grid and you've bought the wedding cake and spent the $30,000 for the ceremony and flown everybody in from all over the world and, you know, written it all up on your credit card and you got to pay it back at 18% interest for the next 5 years, you know. You see where I'm going with this?
Yes, I do.
They're all grids. And then all of a sudden the marriage isn't working. Then what's the next grid that comes along?
Well, there's the divorce grid, there's the power grid, there's the car grid, there's the communications grid.
There's
all of the, there's the legal grid. I mean, there's practically no place you can look. But I do think that there's hope out there, don't you?
I do, but only in an enlightened world.
So you think the most important thing is actually for us to work on our spiritual nature and our enlightenment and our understanding?
Well, Melinda, let me give you something to think about here, okay? I read an article on March the 30th of this year, okay? It was published by the Seattle Post. It was called The Intelligencer Editorial Board. Here's a little history to consider. Insider Trading by Congress, okay? Congress enacted the Securities Act of 1933, which required registration of publicly traded companies, making more information open and available to the public. A year later, Congress added more protections for investors. One of those provisions made it illegal to trade stocks by corporate insiders who were privy to special information that could help or hurt a stock. Now, let me stop a second. Insider trading by corporate insiders.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? This happens in every city by every government official in every municipality.
And that certainly gives us a lot to do, doesn't it?
It does.
You know, John, you've given us a lot to think about tonight. And I want to thank you. We're getting short on time, but I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. And how can people get in touch with you? How about if I put up a link on my site so that when they want to get in touch with you and talk about what needs to be done for energy, I'll just forward them on to you, okay?
Very good. It's been great talking with you, Melinda.
Yes, I've enjoyed it enormously, and you take care.
Thanks.
Night. And that's our show for today, Friday, August 11th, 2006. Politics as it is today in America is a moral hazard for all of us. We can see that. It's time for us to put serious thought into how we can inject honesty, integrity, and simple human decency into our government and get off those grids. Let's make sure government speaks the message of Christ. Here at The Spiritual Politician, we're working to show that government is just a tool, sometimes simple, sometimes complex, but just a tool that we use to do the work we need done. It's up to us, the people, to decide how we organize our communities. And we need to use persuasion, never deceit, never coercion, and never violence. That's what it means to live in the spirit and body of Christ. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom, and may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.